Yeah, I could almost just read it to you instead of actually having outlined it. It would be easier. Okay. It also was written by Paul about the same time while he was imprisoned in Rome. That would be about AD 60. And its recipient was a man named Philemon. It mentions other people, but you can tell by the way it's written that it's specifically to him. And its attempt, the why is it's an attempt to get Philemon to accept his escaped slave back without having him put to death. Onesimus had escaped, possibly stolen some stuff, but then while he was gone, he met Paul, wound up going to Paul's house, got converted, and so Paul was trying to send him back home without it costing him his life. In the greeting, and there's only one chapter, by the way, so everything's just verses. Verse 1 through 3, Paul refers to himself again as a prisoner of Jesus, and Timothy is included in the greeting as one who sent the letter, by the way. And his greeting is to the whole church in Colossae and to Philemon and Appia, and who's probably Philemon's wife, and Archippus. But you can tell, like I say, by the way he talks, it's all just to the one man. And then he goes into his plea for Onesimus. Paul tells him, I could order you to take Onesimus back, but, and he calls Onesimus here his own son, and calls him like my own heart, my own son, things like that. And he makes a joke about Onesimus. His name evidently means useful. And he says something about formerly he was useless to you, but now he has come back useful both to you and me. And Paul points out how much he loves Onesimus and offers to pay back anything that Onesimus might owe to Philemon. And then he has a final request, is that Philemon might prepare a guest room for Paul because he hopes to be released soon. And he finishes with a farewell, and he throws a lot of other people in the farewell. There's Epaphras, Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke, and a blessing of the grace of Christ to be with Philemon's spirit. Key verses to remember. Number 6, verse 6, I pray that you might be active in sharing your faith, so that you will have a full understanding of every good thing we have in Christ. And number 16, no longer as a slave, but better than a slave as a dear brother. He is very dear to me, but even dearer to you, both as a man and as a brother in the Lord. And then in 18, if he has done you any wrong or owes you anything, charge it to me. I think that's a good kind of Jesusism here. He's taken on Onesimus' sins as his own, and bearing the cost of his sin to get Onesimus to be accepted back to his former master, and I guess soon to be again master. And all I really have for an addenda is just the thing about Onesimus meaning useful, and that's why there's the useless, useful joke or pun in verse 11. And for the key insight, not only does Paul encourage Philemon to forgive those who trespass against him, Paul takes Onesimus' debts as his own, showing true Christian love. And that's about all I have.
Questions directed to our good man, Timaeus?
I had a Catholic professor once who said that in verse 19, not to mention that you owe me your very self. I guess since he was Catholic and he believed in salvation by works, he said that this means that since Paul is commanding him to release Onesimus, then Onesimus' owner isn't committing this sin of owning a slave, and therefore he's getting his salvation. Did you find anything about that?
Nope.
Okay. Because I think it would be more like Paul told him about Jesus.
That's kind of what I took it as, just that, you know, you got salvation. I brought you to Christ, and so kind of like you owe me. That's what I took it as.
I agree with your interpretation, by the way. I don't think the New Testament says anywhere that slavery is a sin. It has a lot to say about the relationship between slaves and masters. However, what it does have to say, and in this particular book, is that the way slavery was usually perceived is dead wrong. Onesimus could go back to his master and serve him, and his master and he could both be Christians.
And this is what Paul is suggesting, that in the light of the societal structure that was, that the master should be fair and respectful to his slave. And we have, of course, the table of duties in Ephesians and in Colossians both, which have to do with duties, slaves to masters, masters to slaves. And perhaps if we want to bring this up to date in terms of where we are in our society today, we might see employer-employee. It is a known fact that some employees get a bad shake from their employers as they don't get a living wage for putting out solid, substantial work. You've heard about the sweatshops as a case in point. And it's also a fact that a lot of workers ease off in their work day and take unnecessary breaks and don't put in a full day's work to earn a full day's pay. So both sides are guilty sometimes. And what Paul is seeing, slaves and masters, be fair and honest with each other in your relationships and serve each other in a God-pleasing way. But of course, to forgive the slave here, it was basically unheard of because, as our good brother here mentioned, slaves were nothing. They were considered like property in the Roman world, and you could do anything you wanted to with your property. If your property made you unhappy, you could get rid of it. You could even kill it, because a slave was not a person. A slave was a thing. And sadly, in our early American history, there was some of that mentality as well, as slaves were brought overseas and treated subhumanly, and there are many instances where slaves were treated very well. So, I think that our society has come to the point of seeing that the slavery business rarely ever works, but it could work, depending on how the relationship is perceived. If it's seen as a fair relationship, a mutually agreeable relationship, one that serves both well, then it's another story. And this is what Paul is arguing for here, which is different from what it probably had been before. So the question of, had there been sin in the relationship before? Very possibly. Paul is saying, okay, now rebuild the relationship and carry it on without sin. Well, thank you. Yes, we can say a little bit about this short epistle as well. As was pointed out by Chris already, there is a little bit of punning going on here. And I know that a lot of people think that punning is punishment, but it is not meant to be so in all instances. What you have here, of course, in verse 11 is the commonly recognized pun, where it says here that he who was formerly useless to you is now useful. All right, so a Christos useless, you Christos useful. Yes, that is a pun. But the real pun, my friends, I think, is in the name Onesimus, which most interpreters do not catch. What they do catch is that Onesimus means useful, and a Christos means useless, and you Christos means to good use. But the real pun is in verse 10 and 20, where the man's name is virtually repeated in the verb form here. May I have some benefit from you, Paul is saying. You know, he's going to visit, and I want you now to give me a little payback for giving back, you know, this good slave to you. May I have some advantage. May you be useful for me, Philemon, as I've been useful for you. So that's the real pun here, which only a few interpreters and commentaries catch. But, of course, now if they took their Greek seriously, they would catch it right away, wouldn't they, Chris? All right, thank you. I really appreciate what Horber does in his introductory notes. I know you touched on that, but I'd like to put it on the board for you because this is so well stated. You have a case of a relationship. Now, this ink isn't too good here. Let's try another one. A relationship between sinner, advocate, and the forgiver. And the sinner is Onesimus. He is a slave who probably absconded with property from his master and ran away, and thus by running away also by, is personally stealing from the master because he's his master's property, but he may well have been also a thief. He is the sinner. The advocate for him is, in this epistle, Paul. And the forgiver should be and would be Philemon, the slave owner. Now, what Horbert gives us in his notes is beautiful because he says that this is a picture of ourselves. We are sinners before God, but our advocate is Jesus, who stands up for us in the presence of God, and of course the one who forgives us is God. So it's a beautiful picture of what happens in the matter of sin and grace. Philemon illustrates it so beautifully. Well, Martin Luther is quoted as saying, "We are all Christ's Onesimi if we believe." In other words, if we are people of faith, then we will also be forgivers, as Onesimus is asked to be. Well, I think that's kind of the high point of what this book is about. It's very short, and my study guide notes suggest that you might think of the parable of the unmerciful servant that the Gospel of Matthew develops in this light. You know, we've been forgiven so much, can't we forgive just a little bit that we owe our brother? And that seems to be the point of this writing.